Welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. This is the podcast where we explore the people and stories that make up the tech and venture ecosystem. Don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, and share the podcast because it really helps us get the word out to more people who are curious about understanding even more about the world of venture capital. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today, I had with me via Zoom, Jack Kuvek. Jack is the author behind the cheeky newsletter, Jabroni Capital, a newsletter as unreliable as your lead investor. He launched Raise Your Seed Round as a fundraising coach, helping startups raise money by telling a better story, driving FOMO, and getting more meetings booked with investors. He's been program manager at Antler and done some crazy stuff in the crypto and gaming space in Serbia. I'll leave it to you to unravel the fact from fiction. In today's episode, we talked about raising a $53 million ICO, moving to Belgrade and fleeing back to the States when the crypto business imploded, shitposting on LinkedIn, and whether or not Jabroni Capital is the true Jack, the hype cycle of fundraising is over today, what to do next, and how authentic people who build relationships are going to win the game. Let's get straight into it. Jack, great to have you here. I'm going to have to dock your pay because you didn't make it to the studio. You are on Zoom alone. But for our audience to get to know you a bit better, I want to run through a bit of a quick fire with you. Please keep your answers short and snappy. You want to keep this under a couple of minutes. So what was your first job?
I was a lifeguard. I got high all the time.
Excellent. What did you do before you got into the tech and venture ecosystem?
I built Minecraft servers.
Okay. What triggered your move into building Raise Your Seed Round?
I quit my job and realized I'm a horrible employee and was like, I have to do something to make money on my own.
Okay. And what would you be doing if you hadn't gotten into the venture ecosystem?
Comedy writing and failed comedian.
Excellent. Talk about Raise Your Seed Round. Who's it for? What does it do? And why do you do it better?
We help early stage startup founders raise money. We work with pre-seed, seed, and Series A primarily. The reason it's better is it's not high level. It's just focused on actual tactics that people have used to raise and go through like the open, honest reality of fundraising from the perspective of people who've done it before.
Okay, amazing. And tell me about a couple of companies that you are excited about right now.
I think we were talking about this earlier. Really excited about Vanguard, Nvidia, BlackRock. I want to own all the real estate. No one in America should have houses, in my opinion. None of this, we should be owned by the corporate overlords. So yeah. Really excited about what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. And I'm guessing Tezzer's right up there as well.
Oh, big fan of Tezzer. And honestly, I was a really diehard FTX bro, but SBF was kind of railroaded by the tech guys and the government. So I don't really think that jury's... That was a fair verdict, but what can you do?
Mainstream media and the blob, I think, have basically killed that. Last question, West Coast or East Coast?
East Coast.
Amazing. All right, we're going to get into some of the detail in the main podcast. So looking forward to that. Thank you very much, Jack.
Beautiful. Thanks for having me.
Jack, great to have you here with me again. Wish you were in the studio. I think this would have been a massive, massive laugh had you had have been. We're going to get straight into some interesting stuff. I'm going to leave it to the audience to figure out how much of this is life imitating art and how much of it is parody. But, sometimes when life does imitate art and truth seems crazier than fiction, Jack steps in. So talk me through the early part of your journey in the venture ecosystem, more specifically in the crypto space back in 2016. And again, I will leave it to the audience to figure out whether this is a real deal or something you cooked up for your newsletter.
Oh yeah, this is a fun one. So when I was about, when I was 18 years old, my freshman year of college, I got really deep into crypto. So this is like 2015, 2016. And like everyone at that time, I could have invested in literally anything and made Monopoly money. You know, Bitcoin was $300, Ethereum was $2. And I was like, this is the future. I'm going to fucking put all my money into this. And by all of my money, I mean like literally $1,000. So I get really deep into crypto. And over the next couple of months, it does fine. You know, I've got a couple $1,000 now. I make it into like $3,000 or $4,000 by the summer from like the time of January when I first invest. I'm like, I'm a genius. Come the summer of 2016, I find the first gaming cryptocurrency. They wanted to use cryptocurrency payments for video games because there's a lot of chargeback fraud. It's a fake ecosystem. So people swipe a credit card and go, I didn't buy 100 gold coins. So the game company gets fucked over. So I'm pretty like, similar this
to,
makes
similar to porn in that case, I guess, right?
Exactly. So very similar markets in a lot of ways. And I had run these popular Minecraft servers in high school and I was making like 20 or 30 grand as a teenager, but like half of that would be chargeback and fraud. So like I was familiar with the problem. So I reach out, I find this cryptocurrency. They've got a Slack channel back before crypto communities are cool. And I mean, like literally no one gave a fuck about crypto communities,
pre-Discord, yeah, pretty ancient stuff, right?
Exactly. So I'm like literally on old timey like web forums arguing with some guy named like Dick Rider 69 about how sweet Bitcoin is. So I reach out to the CMO of this company who's like a surfer bro, who's like the only American on this team of Eastern Europeans building this gaming crypto. And I'm like, I will do anything for free. I know a lot about gaming. I know a lot about crypto. So I joined their Slack channel with like 25 people and proceeded just like argue with a bunch of neckbeard old guys and like dunking on them about how great this crypto is. And turns out I'm very convincing. Come the fall of that year, they ignore me for months. They reach out to me, get on a Zoom call, and they're like, we'll hire you to be our community manager. We'll pay you 2,000 game credits a month. Now, paint you a picture. Game credits is 10 cents a coin. It's maybe a $15 million market cap cryptocurrency at the time, which, by the way, is still top 100. Because at this point, Bitcoin's not even $1,000. It's maybe $500, $600.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, this is a dream come true. I get to have my face on some tech website. I get to like avoid doing schoolwork because I hate college. And I get to like be a part of this cool cryptocurrency. So I join, I'm managing a tiny little, you know, community of 25 people on Slack, a couple dozen, maybe a couple hundred people on this forum and writing tweets, whatever. Over the next couple months, it goes from being one of these experiences where they come to me and they're like, hey, we're starting to do PR. Will you write a press release for us? And I'm like, for sure, I'll write a press release. And then I have to like go Google what the fuck a press release is after. And then 5 days later, it's on Yahoo Finance after I get on a call with like a Cuban consultant who barely speaks English. And he's like doing the SEO part of the newsletter. I'm doing like the English part of the newsletter. And we're like talking with his like 5-year-old daughter's coming on the calls. And it's this like wacky experience where this, you know, 18, 19 year old kid is spending all of his time on the internet with Eastern Europeans, Cubans, and like whoever else is interested in crypto. Over the next couple months, this crypto goes from being, you know, 10 cents a coin to 20 cents, 30 cents, 40 cents, $1, $2, $3, $4. And the community goes from being a couple dozen people to a couple hundred, a couple thousand. All of a sudden, come, you know, January, February, March of 2017, it's one of the biggest crypto communities in the world at the time. The team comes to me and says, hey, Jack, will you market an ICO? And I'm like, of course I'll market an ICO.
What's an ICO?
Again, what's an ICO?
I'm not sure anyone still understands what an ICO is, but okay,
yeah,
that's fine.
So basically they want to raise money for this cryptocurrency. So they're going to sell a new cryptocurrency and take in other like Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, in exchange for this new cryptocurrency. So we're hoping to raise like $5 to $10 million. We launch April 2017, and essentially over the next 3 weeks, we raised $53 million, raised the largest ICO in the world at the time. I'm 19. I now have Monopoly money. Like literally from the span of in 9 months, I go from having like $4,000 or $5,000 to several million dollars worth of cryptocurrency.
And presumably you're running this all on a spreadsheet because that is the traditional way of doing this, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, there were no spreadsheets. I just have like money on flash drives that I like don't even know what to do with.
Bits of paper with 10 words and remember the cold the cold storage over here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I'm like calling up my twin brother. I'm like, all right, so in a drawer.
Wait, is your twin brother is your twin brother Adam Newman? Don't lie.
It's Adam Newman. All right. I gotta be honest. I changed my name because we wanted to diversify our brand a little bit. He didn't want to be like Jake Newman and Adam Newman. We wanted to just spread out a little bit.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, it was one of those wild experiences. So to wrap up the story there, so we spend the next of the summer working on this crypto. Come fall, I go back to college. I'm like, what the fuck am I even doing here? Like, I have Monopoly money for a 19, 20 year old. School sucks. And like, they're not giving me credit, like, for having built a real business. They're telling me I have to do business writing classes. And I've like been writing press releases that go to hundreds of thousands of people. And I'm like, does that not count? And they're like, no, it doesn't count. So I drop out of college and the company comes to me and says, hey, we'll pay for you to come to Serbia. We'll buy you a plane ticket. We'll get you an apartment. Come move to Belgrade, Serbia, and be like the American liaison and join our marketing team. So I was like, great. So I drop out of college. I move to Belgrade, Serbia. I land in Serbia. And like, it's like, I haven't slept for 15, 20 hours. And some 6'4 guy named Slobodan comes and picks me up. He's bald. He's 23 years old. He's like, I'm Slobodan. I come take you to apartments. He's like 260 pounds. And I learn at that moment, Slobodan is affiliated with the mob.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, we've got like Serbian mobsters, because like that's who like controls most of the real estate in Serbia, that are like managing the apartment for like the Westerners that come stay. So they take me to this apartment. I end up having this like 5 or 6 month journey.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to introduce you to our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Emerge One. Emerge One CFOs partner with VC-backed founders from seed to series B to manage and raise capital and plan how it should be deployed, controlling cash so that they can do what they do best to scale strategically. You can find them at emergeone.co.uk. That's emergeone.co.uk. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
In Serbia, the whole company ends up falling apart where I'm over there. I lead like this mini coup because I realize they're misspending funds. I whistleblow. I flee the country. I come back a sadder, poorer, disgruntled version of myself, having dropped out of college, lost several million dollars. Like, I can't get a job in crypto because the entire industry has collapsed in 2018. So I have to go, you know, figure out another path. Or like my parents, like, go spend the remaining of your money to buy a, you know, go to NYU or Stanford or whatever. You had good grades. Go back to college. And I'm like, I will literally die. Like I will wilt away like a flower that doesn't have water if I go to college. So I managed to convince an accelerator program to let me in as a founder. They end up hiring me to be their program manager. And that sets me off on the course of getting back into tech.
That was Antler, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that their program has exploded. I mean, like back in those days, I'm guessing it was a bit smaller, but they're everywhere.
Oh my God.
They're everywhere now. Like they are all over the place.
Yeah, they did the literal blitzkrieg approach of building an accelerator, which I'm not sure is the best approach, but you know, they've been wildly successful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in if you look at the aggregate, yeah, probably, but like individually, there's probably bits and pieces that maybe don't work as well as the others, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So wait, because I gotta dig into a bit of this. So the one question, and because I'm Asian, I have to ask this. What like your parents were okay with you dropping out of college and heading off to Serbia? I'm like, what was that conversation like?
So in classic fashion, I had all of my family invest in crypto. So at this point, my parents had also made a substantial amount of money in the shitcoins that I had shilled on them. And my dad as well was like actively on the forums that I was managing. And he was like a whale in this crypto. And so come October.
But it's not a Ponzi scheme. Let's just be really clear. There's no Ponzi happening.
No, it was not a Ponzi scheme. It turned into like, it started off legit. And then as I got over there, the people who had taken over as CEO were like misspending resources stuff. And like, they were just trying to do like 10 projects. Like we had like two or three things that we said we were going to deliver. And they were like, they had like 10 or 15 new things they were building, which was just like fucking insane. And they thought like, because they have Monopoly money now, because we raised Bitcoin, raised when Bitcoin was 2K, all of a sudden it's 20K. We have $1 billion worth of crypto.
Well,
just build anything.
And not only that, it's an ICO. So actually like there are no equity holders. Like you don't have the same shareholder responsibility and fiduciary responsibilities as you do if you go out and raise traditional financing, right? This was the whole issue around, you know, ICOs back in the day. Like are they regulated? Are they securities? Are they tokens? Are they not? What is it, right?
Totally.
But
and
yeah,
dumb 20-year-old Jack doesn't know any of this. Naive idiot Jack is like, thinks that this is all fine and well. And then I get over and then I'm like, this is the stuff of nightmares. I'm going to be screwed. And like, I have to say something or else maybe my career will be ruined forever. Like that was literally where I ended up because I didn't, you know, because it wasn't regulated and it should be.
Yeah, yeah. And so going back to your dad, the whale on the forums, like,
yeah,
so he was just like, yeah, Jack, go for it, I'm assuming, right, at this point.
Yeah, so he actually went on a business trip with me in the October before I dropped out that January. I flew over to Belgrade for like 4 days. I had my dad come with me because he's like, I'm going to go vet out these motherfuckers, like, see that this is legit. And it was. And like the people there were really talented and smart and that they took really good care of me. My dad came over and he looked at me and he was like, Jack, you've got some money. You have almost a 4.0. Just fucking go. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. He's like, you're risking nothing. It's like, this is far more interesting. You'll regret it for the rest of your life. Like, you'll be fine.
And you'll learn a shit ton.
Oh my God. Yeah. And absolutely no regrets. I was incredibly grateful for my parents. They've been, you know, arduous supporters of me taking an esoteric and kind of wild path in life the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, that's really sweet, actually. And again, speaking as an Asian and an Asian father, kids don't do this at, like, just don't do that. No, I mean, like, it's good. I'm a massive advocate for going out and figuring out your stuff. Yeah. Like, I like you, hated university, like, came out of it with a degree.
Yeah.
God only knows how, frankly. Yeah. Like, I really shouldn't have. And actually, that's what taught me that university just means nothing, because I should have failed and I didn't. And the fact that I didn't just taught me that the university was kind of pointless. Okay, let's move on a little bit from that. And again, audience, do write in and tell us how much of that story you believed. It will be interesting to see what the take is. But I first came across you on LinkedIn, where I think I clearly spend too much time, but I've got a feeling you do as well. But what I love was the absolutely believably unbelievable persona you had created for yourself. And let's face it, your engagement suggests I'm not the only one who enjoys your irreverence. In fact, to the extent that when I first met you, I was expecting like a blonde, blue-eyed, I don't know, like someone completely different from your profile picture, because I was like, no, this guy cannot be this guy. It's got to be someone else. But tell me why you decided to take this route of shitposting, essentially, and what you hope that Jabroni Capital, which is your newsletter, will spark for your audience other than making them bust their gut laughing.
Yeah, you know, I was doing serious posts on LinkedIn before, and like, I'm a big believer in authenticity. I think authenticity, especially right now, is people are craving it, because so many people are fake and political. And I mean political in like the sense of not even in terms of like actual politics, but saying things that they think are the right things to say rather than things that they actually want to say. And so, and that they actually believe. And so I haphazardly one day was writing a serious post. I had like literally spent hours doing research to write something serious. And I was like, I hate this. I'm literally going to jump off the roof of a WeWork if I keep doing serious stuff. So I write one silly post announcing that I have a fake VC fund called Jabroni Capital, which is probably the first post that you saw. And it immediately goes viral and gets like, you know, 1500 likes in the span of a couple of days. I go up 1000 followers and I'm like, oh, I can be a dickhead and like get followers and hundreds of DMs from people and leads for my business.
I mean,
and so I was like,
the fact that you've put your like a GP at Jabroni, like that, like I'm on a bunch of chats and we all agree if you put investor or VC in your profile, like everything explodes.
Absolutely. So that's the first thing, which I kind of feel bad about because like a lot of people do reach out to me, but it's getting less and less now that the reputation is gone. People are reaching out and be like, I know you're not an investor. I'd just like to like chat with you about fundraising. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So like, but, you know, it just immediately went viral and it's very authentic to me. It's like the same kind of stuff and silly jokes I would say to my friends, you know, like I did this one post that was like, you know, like how am I supposed to take startup founder seriously when the last person who talked to me was a demisexual communist wearing flip flops and a $4,000 winter coat. And I was like, I that literally came from like me being drunk with buddies talking about like the silliness of tech founders that we're running into. And I was like, I'll just try posting this stuff and see if people like it. And they really resonate with it. And you know, and I started just doing this newsletter with just like long form, and I can say things I can't say on LinkedIn because LinkedIn, I have to be like a little more filtered. Otherwise, I did a post yesterday on the migrant crisis and they don't really like that on LinkedIn. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
So the point being that like what I want out of this is I want obviously to build more leads, maybe have a flourishing business. But what I really want out of the newsletter and the satire that I do is I want people to acknowledge the nuance of life.
Yep.
You know, I think that all just saying that like startups are amazing and you should go work at them out of college. Yeah, except you're going to work for some idiot who doesn't know what he's doing. You're going to learn how to do things wrong, and then you're going to be unemployable at real companies. Like, that's another reality with going and working with a startup out of college. But everyone tells colloquially, like, go do this. It'll be great.
Because you only ever see the success, right? Like, no one is sitting on LinkedIn other than me, I think, sitting there going, here are the 30 ways I failed before I actually found something that kind of maybe worked, right? And you only hear about the failures in like these really self-deprecating posts of like, I did everything and I love my colleagues and, you know, it was so sad having to fire everyone, but I burnt through 100 million of capital and couldn't figure out how to do more than 20 grand revenue, right? Like, I mean, the problem is that everyone believes a TechCrunch article. No one wants to face the reality that 9 out of 10 startups fail. And frankly, they are really hard. And for most people, they aren't the right place to start your career because it's not a career. Like, you're basically being thrown in to figure shit out. And if you haven't been around, like, if you haven't actually had the experience of figuring shit out, it's really hard to figure shit out.
Yeah. And most people make the mistake when they get into these things is they don't double down in a skill set that they're really good at and hone that. Like, what I did really good job of early in my career was I just doubled down on community building, which I was like, this is a skill that I can build across many, many companies for years to come. And even if these things fail, I can be like, this community, I grew to 5,000 members, or I did this. And like, a lot of people, this is another unfortunate reality of startups, is you can kind of hide behind the failing startup and be like, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't that I was a bad salesperson. It was just like the company sucked. Where it was like, you know, that's also a very bad thing to do in life, because even at failing companies, if you're really good at marketing, you can get it to 100,000 Twitter followers.
Yeah.
Or if you're really good at sales, you can go get a bunch of enterprise clients, and maybe the margins don't make sense.
Exactly. The financials, the economics aren't right, but actually you've still done your job.
Yeah. So it's a great place to hide for people who like to talk about doing work, but they actually are bad at their fucking jobs is like kind of what I feel with a lot of tech startups.
Shh. You're giving away all the secrets, man. Like, you really I have to convince people that we're really good at being CFOs, and now what you're putting out there might jeopardize my future. So no, but okay. So we're going back to like Jabroni and LinkedIn. Like, I kind of feel like that is you though. Like, to your point, it is how you kind of crack around with your friends. It's like the conversations at the bar late at night. It's the jokes, it's the riffing, it's all of that sort of stuff. And having spoken to you a couple of times, again, exactly as you say, it's nuance, right? Because you are a funny guy, like very clearly a funny guy, but there is a lot of empathy and thoughtfulness behind not only what you write, but also kind of how you speak and what you speak about. And I mean, it struck me, the posts on LinkedIn, I think the reason they resonate so much is because there is that grain of truth within them, right? There is that like no smoke without fire kind of thing, right? Where nothing that you have written, you wrote about Hubermaning, right? And how all the tech bros have suddenly figured out that a cold shower and, you know, meditation and whatever works, right? Now, as someone who does yoga, runs every day, tries to do some breath work in the morning and has a cold shower every morning, like, I didn't need Huberman to teach me that. I kind of figured it out somewhat on my own, but I don't do it because I've been told to do it. I've done it because it works, right? Like it actually does work. I know this makes me sound really, really bad and like the epitome of the tech bro kind of guy. But the problem is all the guys that are out there saying, yeah, it really works for me. But actually they're doing like 10 seconds of cold shower and like, you know, just, you know, three seconds in a yoga position and feeling good about themselves. But it is that grain of truth, right? That you see all the fake personas, maybe is the best way of putting it out there, putting it out there that, you know, this is what we're doing. And you can see right through that. So when you have someone that comes along and kind of shines a light on the, on the hypocrisy, it's actually really satisfying, right? Like, and that's why I really enjoy reading what you write, because I'm like, oh yeah, actually I'm glad you said that, because yeah, I mean, I would never, but you have, so I can now comment on your post because that's less chilling than me going out and writing it myself.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the kind of crux of what's happening here is people are feeling seen either because they've lived this way before, like I have. I just told you, I was the dumb crypto bro who hyped up an ICO and lost his shirt. I've literally done that. And I, through those lessons, I can now go see like a crypto VC talking about how Bitcoin's going to be 100K next week and go like, that's bullshit. You're lying. And you're just spouting off, like you're living in la la land. Well, I guess best case scenario, or you're a liar, worst case scenario. Mm. And I've done that before, so I can relate to it. And all the stuff that I'm trying to do is just make people feel heard. But I'm also like, there's no value judgment attached to anything that I'm doing. Like, a lot of people have been like, well, you should call out X so-and-so VC or talk about people that have wronged you in the past. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. People are dicks. I've been a dick before. And like, I don't want to call people out personally. I just want to like make silly things and sometimes say things that are just so absurd that like, I'm the asshole. Mm. And that's the most important thing that I try and do is like, I want to be the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
So that we can make a point about the larger system without trying to make anyone personally feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because I remember, I think we connected over a post you did on bagging on your non-existent assistant, right? And I think I came into your comments pretending to be your assistant, and we started riffing on that. I just found it really enjoyable, and exactly that, right? It's like you were like, it's very clear that A, that is an archetype of a certain type of either founder or VC. But equally, you were making yourself like the bad guy in that whole exchange, right? So, no, I find it both amusing, cathartic, valuable, and interesting. And look, long may it continue. Where do you see Jabroni going? So, Jabroni being the newsletter, where would you like that to get to?
The thing I'm figuring out right now is I would like it to be something. I would like to bring in other writers and mm-hmm. other people who have voices and try and build like a network or an ecosystem of people that are just being like very real and coming from a lens of like authenticity and saying uncomfortable or funny or goofy things. And maybe try and spread out of just tech mm-hmm. and like, maybe it's like a sports category or a beauty or fashion world, but just talking about all these different industries and places that people spend a lot of their time that are very influential on the main stage. But I want people to attack it from the lens of like nuance and authenticity. So for me, I would like to continue growing this, make it something that, you know, has, you know, goes from being a 1,000-person newsletter to 25, 50, 100,000, and then maybe figure out how to bring in other writers to give them an audience and a voice to talk about all the silly things that are happening in this world in relevant industries to all of our lives.
Yeah, so it's kind of stand up in written form, I guess, is essentially the way. Punching upwards rather than down, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. And then for me personally, just have like a voice to like rant about my philosophies and ideas and things that I think about. Maybe spin it into like doing a podcast of some sort. Maybe you and I, it's Adam and Arish, and we go get ourselves canceled in the tech world inside of the first three episodes. I don't know, something fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think people underestimate the value of fun. I think it is the soul needs some merriment, right? The soul needs some joy. Otherwise, everything just, I mean, like certainly sitting in London in February, the world feels pretty gray and closed. But you also have a day job, right? So let's talk about that for a second, because sure. You know, this is a podcast focused on the venture ecosystem. And as much as I would love to continue talking about joking around, I think you have some really incredible insights into what's going on. So at Raise Your Seed Round, you help founders raise capital by telling a better story and increasing FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. But what is your take on the current fundraising environment? How should founders think about their approach to securing capital right now, today? And what's one thing that they should focus on to make themselves stand out from the crowd? Because it feels like there are going to be a lot of startups clamoring for capital over the next 12 months, and a lot of them are going to fail. So like how you stand out is going to be massively important, right?
Yeah. First thing on the market itself, it's more of a grind than it's been. I think there's so many new entrants into tech and startups in the last 4 or 5 years that it seems disproportionately bad right now. But it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, where there's a lot of people who probably shouldn't have been startup founders that got money.
Yeah.
And there's just, this is a period where we're weeding a lot of those folks out. They're having down rounds, their companies are literally dying. And then that's scaring investors who are no longer putting in the capital. It's down maybe 40% in total volume of deals deployed, but it was up categorically over the last 5 years tremendously. So we're still at a place where like capital being deployed is roughly where it was in like 2020, as far as the numbers that I know. So it's not like it has changed so much. It's just changed a lot from the 2 years of boom that we had.
Yeah.
But what is changing and what has changed is that it used to be that, you know, you and I could form a company, get some traction, put together a killer story, and then go out and put together a competitive round by like trying to get, you know, 50 or 100 introductions, get like 50 meetings in 2 weeks, and then come into those meetings really aggressive, pushing investors for term sheets.
Yeah.
And then like timing hype and sales to happen around then where you would close out a round. That's way harder to do now. And now it's more of like a grind where there was a lot of scouts and random people who would forward your deal to investors. Now you have to build relationships with people to forward their deal to investors, which is like, you know, how it was always for the history of time. And now people are complaining a lot. So like, you know, I see it as like the winners are going to be people who are authentically good at building relationships, have something that's like legitimately fundable, shocker, and have prioritized getting some level of validation, traction, money, revenue, so that they can actually, you know, that justifies putting lighter fluid, which is venture capital, onto those funds. Like that's all it's meant to be. Now, in terms of how to stand out, the biggest thing I find is storytelling. You know, I'm doing a workshop tomorrow on how to build a pitch deck from a storytelling standpoint. But what I always lean into is like, why are all pitch decks just stated? Like people just state things. The problem is X. Our solution does Y.
Nothing weaves them together. Yeah, exactly.
Right. I was like, why don't you just, what if you did all of that, but just wrote it like a story?
Yeah.
You know, I was a CFO. And I noticed this one problem. Yeah. And then I went out and tried to sell people on a fake solution by building a landing page. And I got 10 customers.
And actually,
so then I built a...
And actually, sorry to interrupt. Like, I often prefer, like when I'm doing this myself, or even, you know, when I'm reading them, I prefer long form, like written docs rather than a deck, right? Because the deck, like a deck is something to get a foot in the door with an investor. But if you can, I mean, Terry Pratchett calls us storytelling, or used to call us storytelling apes, right? In his Discworld kind of series, I always refer back to him because he is one of the greatest storytellers I've ever had the pleasure of reading. But we are storytelling apes, right? Like I talk about numbers and narrative, and narrative is always greater than numbers, right? Like a CFO is useless if they just come out and say, well, our P&L, our revenues were this, our gross profit was this, our EBITDA was that. Like people want to understand the story behind those numbers, not just the numbers themselves, right? I think a lot of founders have gotten kind of not even desensitized, but they've had it hammered into them, like metrics, traction, you've got to show this. So they've lost that art of actually, like I always say, the story is what gets the investor, and then the traction is what decides how big the check is going to be, right? So you got to build that emotional connection, right?
Totally. And I say the same thing all the time. Like I tell people, like, we're monkeys, you know, like we 300,000 years ago, our brains were the same as they are today. The only difference is like wisdom, time, and technology. But one thing that's been consistent through all of that is the sharing of stories to translate information. Like that's always what we've done. And so people focus so much on design and whatever. And I'm like, narrative is everything. It's how you're packaging your numbers, how you're making, like, if you're a good writer, you can be a good raiser. But like everyone's using ChatGPT these days, which uses like bullshit, boring, like, business models are really important because they aggregate information in a way. And it's like, that's a ChatGPT response. Human beings don't speak like that. Bots on LinkedIn do.
Yeah.
Like that's where it's getting its information from. Like how can you eloquently say something that convinces people that like 50 users is really a big deal? Because I've done that before. That's what my last pitch deck did. It was like 50 people, but we're like, and here's why it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can do that, you can raise money way better than your competitors. The last point I'll say is being authentic to your personality. Too many people try and be professionals. My co-founder and I would go into pitches and be like, we're Huddle and we're a metal band out of Des Moines, Iowa, because we had a wall of guitars behind us. And it was the silliest thing. But what it did is it immediately presented to these guys, like, we're goofy. This is our personality. And then when we go and actually give a killer pitch, they're like, they remember us.
Yeah.
We stand out.
Yeah.
So it was just like, let's stand out. Let's be remembered.
Yeah.
Even if they're like, those guys were idiots, but they're thinking about us.
Yeah.
So we win.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, I mean, just to add to that, like, and I wouldn't necessarily advocate to every founder to go out there and say we're out. But I mean, the point is, if you take yourself too seriously, if there is no, you know, on this podcast, a number of people have said, right, the average VC investor founder relationship lasts longer than the average UK marriage, right? Like, so you are in this for the next 10 years with this investor. You have to build rapport. There has to be empathy. There has to be, you know, you want these guys on your side. And that doesn't happen with numbers. That only happens if you have a story to tell, right? Like, there has to be emotion involved. Jack, like, this has been an awesome conversation. I feel like, again, there's so much stuff that we left uncovered and could go into, because I think there's just a huge amount of humor that we could have gone into. But for the time being, for the audience, where's the best place for them to look for you online? Are you on, well, you are clearly on LinkedIn, but what's your handle on LinkedIn? Are you on Twitter? Where else are you online?
Yeah, so my handle everywhere is just Jack Kuvek, K-U-V-E-K-E. So my name, and then raiseyourseed.com. Those are the best places to find me.
Amazing. Jack, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute blast. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure we'll have many, many more. But thank you so much, and really appreciate your time.
Appreciate it, brother. It was a blast.